Good morning. Noel Coward was known for his wit and for writing great parts for women.
Have you known her long?
About 4 months. We met on a house party in Norfolk.
Very flat, Norfolk.
There's no need to be unpleasant.
But it was no reflection on her, unless, of course, she made it flatter.
Your voice takes on an acid quality every time you mention her.
I swear I'll never mention her again.
Good. Now keep off yours.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Noel and Gertie in the famous Private Lives. Noel Coward wrote some of the best-known plays and films of the 20th century, including Private Lives, Blithe Spirit and Brief Encounter, and astonishingly, one of his works, The Better Half, has just been rediscovered after 80 years. Coward was famous for writing great parts for women, no doubt inspired by his close relationship with Gertrude Lawrence, the actress he first met in Manchester. Coward was homosexual, but his work often dealt with the complex relationships he had with a number of women, and The Better Half is no exception. It depicts a love triangle between a man and two females. Well, Elizabeth Sharland is the author of a new novel about Coward, Blue Harbour Revisited. The late Sheridan Morley was Coward's friend and biographer, and Professors Mike Wilson and Richard Hand of the University of Glamorgan found The Better Half.
Put your daughter on the stage, Mrs. Worthington. Don't put your daughter on the stage.
This play concerns three characters, David and his wife, Alice, and Alice's friend, Marion. Marion and David are in love, but David doesn't want to divorce Alice because he's still in love with Alice, but Alice wants to initiate a divorce to allow David and Marion to be happy together. So the characters are trying to work their way through the intricacies of convention and divorce law and a kind of rather unconventional set of relationships.
The wife in the play, Alice, confesses to having an affair, and in fact she's making this all up just to get a reaction out of David. And David, being such a noble modern man, forgives her. And Alice replies, "How dare you? Think what I've just told you, that I've been living the life of a harlot for the last 3 years. I've disgraced you forever and dragged your name in the mud. And you go on being big and noble and forgiving me. It's nauseating." So that's the kind of tone you get in the play. You know, it's Noel Coward finding his style as a writer.
In order to distinguish us from less enlightened minds, we all wear a green carnation.
I went to see Noel Coward's old home in Jamaica. It's now actually a guest house, and they gave me Noel Coward's old bedroom. And I was so inspired by the house and the beautiful gardens and a little villa that he has, two villas in the garden, where people like Catherine Hepburn and Marlene Dietrich and all the wonderful people that he invited down there, a lot of wonderful, elegant women, that I wrote this novel. It's just as he left it, and you still have this atmosphere of those Coward days. So when you stand having a shower, you know that you're standing in the footsteps of, you know, Marlene Dietrich, Catherine Hepburn, Mary Martin. They all stayed in these little villas.
What are you doing here?
I'm on my honeymoon.
Very interesting. So am I.
I hope you're enjoying it.
It hasn't started yet.
Neither is mine.
Are you happy?
Perfectly.
Good.
Are you?
Ecstatically.
Coward did surround himself with all these elegant, sophisticated women. He worked with Gertie Lawrence, of course, and he wrote a play for her, The Private Lives, and then he fell in love, if you could say that, with Gertie Lawrence, and I think that was the main relationship with a woman in his life.
Have you known her long?
About 4 months. We met on a house party in Norfolk.
Very flat, Norfolk.
There's no need to be unpleasant.
No reflection on her, unless, of course, she made it flatter.
Your voice takes on an acid quality every time you mention her.
I swear I'll never mention her again.
Good. Now keep off yours.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Someday I'll find you, moonlight behind you.
It's been very hard to revive that particular play because it depends on a couple, and Noel and Gertie were, in every sense, except the sexual. We know that Noel was lifelong gay, she was lifelong impossible, two marriages, but in fact, they were an extraordinary double. And when he was dying in 1973, she had been dead for 20 years. And idiotically, I said to him one night, "Do you still think about her?" And he said, "Every night when I go to sleep and every morning when I wake up, I see her on that private life's terrace in France in that white Molyneux dress. She never goes away."
"You're growing lovelier and lovelier every second as I look at you. You don't hold any mystery for me, darling. Do you mind? There isn't a particle of you that I don't know, remember, and want."
All plays had to be submitted for approval from the Lord Chamberlain. Now, the Lord Chamberlain did have the power to amend the script in any way. They could ban a play outright, but more often they might just demand that certain words be changed or certain scenes. Noel Coward's The Better Half was no exception to this. There is one blue pencil mark. And the phrase that it's used against is a line that Alice says to David, her husband, "Just because your endeavours are egged on by women of the Marian type who camouflage their desire for your body behind a transparently effusive admiration of your brain." And obviously what upset the censor here was the idea that women can be driven by sexual desire. And this was obviously problematic, and the fact that women may hide it for some intellectual interest, but underneath it all, it's lust. But in the end, I think it's fascinating that the censor said, "Well, okay, this is objectionable, but we'll let the play go through."
Yeah. The gallery was out to make trouble. And at the end, they were booing and screaming. My mother, who was slightly deaf, thought they were cheering, and I had to explain. No, dear, it was lovely.
The reason Coward's voice was so clipped is because his mother was slightly deaf, and therefore he practiced speaking extremely clearly for her sake. And he adored her. He brought her over to New York and put her in an apartment here when he was working in New York. But that was just before the war broke out. And he couldn't get her back. When the war broke out, she was stuck here in New York and begging him to try and find a ship to take her home. And that was sort of heartbreaking because he just couldn't do it. Several times she went down to the pier and evidently had to go back again. But when he did get her back to London, he bought her a flat in Eaton Square and took care of her. And, of course, he was there at the end. He writes very movingly about being by her bed and holding her hand. And he was absolutely devastated when she died.
"Ooh, again, whenever spring breaks through again, time may lie heavy between, but what has been is past forgetting."
I believe that all his great songs are about a kind of lost love. Someday I'll find you. I'll see you again, not here, not now. He always had this sense of a love that was just out of reach, and that's what makes his songs, I think, so incredibly haunting.
"In my heart will ever lie just the echo of a sigh."
Coward was a genius in that he managed to capture the anguish and heartbreak of people being in love. And most of his plays reflect this. For instance, he said towards the end of his life, "I hate to fall in love. Falling in love is so painful and inconvenient." And as the years slipped by, he wanted none of it. He did fall in love with an actor towards the end of his life, and the actor was married. And Coward really tried to have a relationship with him and was very much in love with him. And the actor tried to commit suicide. But Coward was devastated by that relationship, and I think that's when he said, "Falling in love is too painful and inconvenient." And he said it in so many ways, not only in his plays, but of course his songs and his poetry. They're just so full of anguish.
"I'm world weary, world weary, living in a great big town. I find it so dreary, so dreary. Everything looks grey or brown. I want an ocean."
His lifelong partner, Graham Payne, who was with him for 40 years, found by Noel's bedside the morning he died in March 1973 the fragment of what is quite clearly not a play or a film or a song. It's a poem. And he had written the night before he died, "When I have fears, as Keats had fears, of the moment I'll cease to be, it gives me comfort to dwell upon remembered friends who are dead and gone, and the jokes we had, and the fun. How happy they are, I cannot know, but happy am I who loved them so."
The late Sheridan Morley, and you also heard Mike Wilson, Richard Hand, and Elizabeth Sharland.